It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raymond along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
Fantabulous Seafood Shed.
Yeah.
And I went over and partook of some breakfast Saturday morning.
Why am I not surprised?
I had to go get some of that bacon I was talking about Wednesday night.
Yeah, he got to talking about that stuff. So
I know. I got hungry, man. I stayed hungry, you know, until I had a chance to go Saturday morning. But it's they do an outstanding job, and they really do a great service for our veterans and our first responders, and they treat them with honor and give all of those people a discount on their foods because they respect them for what they're doing as well, you know. So I've got to back people like that, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know it's good food if you start thinking about it on Wednesday and you anticipate it for that many days, and then come Saturday morning and it's still that good when you get there and eat it. You know,
man,
you know it's good stuff.
I stayed hungry for 4 days.
Uh-huh.
Sure did.
Yep, that's all good.
But let me tell you, I run into a scenario there a while ago. Actually, I've been talking to you about it off the air, and that is that. And we've talked about it before, I think, and had to do probably with some BMWs and all, and that's batteries,
mm-hmm.
and the size of the batteries, and trying to buy a high performance or a higher voltage battery that was supposed to do a better job than what the stock battery is going to do.
Right.
But then my scenario was, my buddy called me and said, hey, where can I get a bracket to fit this battery? I bought one of those Ultra batteries. Altima batteries.
Yeah.
And he said, I bought that high dollar one. He said, I want to put it in this Corvette. And I said, take it back and get the stock battery. I said, do you have a fabrication shop? No. I said, well, take it back and get the stock battery.
Get the one.
Don't mess up that, you know, that late model vet, man. Come on.
Right. Well, you know.
I don't want to see put it in there with baling wire or, you know.
No.
You know, some cut off extension cord or something. Wrap it around that.
Yeah. I see all kinds. That's no doubt. But, you know, it's so important, especially on the newer cars, to put the correct battery in the car.
Well, that was my main scenario going there, because everything is so electronic now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now we hear the newer cars are coming out with electronic control air conditions even.
Yep.
And electronic control power steering pumps.
Mm-hmm.
And not running a belt off of the motor so that the motor doesn't get drained down of what little power it's got. That's why we can see a 1.4, 1.5, or whatever size motor, a 2.2, a 2.3, a 2.5,
right.
Little, you know, 2-, 3-, 4-cylinder motor,
mm-hmm.
in these cars, because you're not running anything off of the vehicle, off of the motor itself.
Yeah.
You know, like we did in the past, you'd run the fan, you had the alternator, you had the air compressor.
Yeah.
You know, if you had the air brakes or whatever. On the car, our air ride, my town car does. Everything run off of the motor, you know, so you're pulling all that power off of it.
Well, you know, it's just back in the day you had that big A6 GM compressor that weighed about 40 pounds.
Oh, yeah, man, I didn't even like to put those on the shelf.
Yeah, and, you know, that thing drew about as much horsepower as some of those old motors make.
Sure.
They cooled. Don't get me wrong. They were.
Oh, yeah, they cooled, man. You hang icicles in the cars.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, the problem was they just drew way too much horsepower. They've gotten way more efficient on the compressors. You know, you can have much smaller package, you know, much lighter, draws way less horsepower, and still do the same job, you know.
Well, they fine-tune the ACs and all so much that they don't need all of that Freon and stuff like those big units used to have to pump through them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it wasn't unusual to have 4 pounds of refrigerant in a system in a car. And we've got cars that have less than a pound in them.
Holy cow.
Now, you know, it's
but yet they do, in essence, a better job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Plus, you better make sure it's sealed up. You lose a little bit off of a 4-pound system, and it's not going to affect it that bad. You
right.
lose a little bit off of a 1-pound system, and
oh, yeah.
it quits working.
You know it right yeah. quick. Yeah, right yeah, quick. Something's wrong. Yeah. yeah.
But and trust me, the machine they have is, you know, that puts it in, takes it out, you know, recycle and recovery machine.
Well, now, what is the new Freon on that you're using now, and how exotic is that machine that you're talking about? Does it actually weigh the Freon as it goes in, or I mean, or, and
yeah, it's the of course it's the R1234 RF, I mean YF refrigerant. That's in the newer cars. It's been out for a few years now in certain vehicles. But, you know, it's the machine is, shoot, this thing is almost 20 grand for a machine, you know, to pull it out and check it for leaks and put it back in. It also checks the refrigerant for any kind of contaminants.
So, in other words, you yeah. said you take the Freon out. So, to do it properly, you need to purge that system.
Oh, I mean, what you do is basically if you're pulling anything out of it, if it's got a little bit of refrigerant left in it, you're going to do a recovery on it, which it pulls everything out of the system.
So if you don't do that, though, then you can't determine exactly what you're putting back in it, right?
Right. Well, yeah, you've got to make sure it's evacuated all the way out before you start back in, because like you know, like I say, if you're talking about a system that only has a pound or pound and a quarter, you know, it's very, you know, specific amount has to go back in it. You know,
are you saying that you actually weigh it now?
Oh yeah, well it's weighed through the machine. Yeah.
Okay,
it has an external source tank, then it has an internal tank.
So it's not like a scale that you put weight on.
Well, no, it's not like the old days where you used to set the tank on a scale and
right.
put
but
it in.
Yeah, I'm going back to those days. So
yeah, yeah, you know, it's which works, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, it worked. It worked for us.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we're weighing this thing out in grams, you know,
Mm-mm-mm.
as to how much is going in there. And, you know, it's still expensive stuff, you know, that they're still up there. I think at one point the little 10-pound container weight cost almost $800.
Say yeah. what?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So they're proud
of it. 10 pound.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're saying if you had to recharge a system, say a pound, then you got 800. So that's 80. You're gonna have to charge for that Freon, which is what, probably $150 or so.
Yeah, you're gonna be right around there. Yeah, you're gonna be right around there.
Just so, for the Freon.
Just for
a pound.
Yeah.
Just thank God you didn't have to put 4 in it. You know.
Well, you know, it could be worse. You could have one of those old systems that you had to put R12 in.
I know, yeah.
And have to go try and find 4 pounds of R12.
Well,
if you
found R12 now, it'd be over $800
for a tank. At least. Yeah, I think I've still got one can left.
All right, well, I want to go back to where I was at to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any cars on the market now that you've seen and are in the General Motors line that actually are running the motors without anything running off of them? Everything's running electrical.
Some of our hybrid stuff is that way. You know, it doesn't have an AC compressor, and most I can't think of any of the smaller vehicles. The only thing with a actual hydraulic power steering pump on them anymore is our 3/4 and up, you know, trucks. Everything else is electric power steering. Brakes are actually, if you have a V8 motor, or most of these motors do run a vacuum pump off the motor because the motors don't generate enough vacuum to properly operate the brake boosters. Just a totally separate, different setup on the motors, being a direct injected motor.
That's on trucks and bigger vehicles.
Even on our little cars.
Oh, really? Okay.
They're running a small vacuum pump off the back of the head. Yeah. Which is another thing that makes it really important to change oil in your vehicle, because that oil vacuum pump is also lubricated by the oil in the motor. So,
Let me add another thing to that. How about the turbos and things of that nature? Do they run engine motor oil now?
Oh yeah,
when they did before. So that's another important factor of why we're back to that properly changing the oil.
Right. Most of our small family motors are all turboed. So, you know, it's really critical to get your oil changed on those, you know. They're good little motors. Keep them cool.
Yeah, but I'll bet those things are $1,000 or more dollars per, you know, for one of those turbos.
Oh, yeah, it's at least that. But
okay.
If, you know, if you keep it cool and keep the oil changed, then it'll treat you right. But don't do one of those two things, and it'll give
you
some issues.
Just another area why it's so important on the oil change, or mm-hmm. proper oil changes, with the proper type oil.
Right, right.
Yeah, because if somebody happens to slip a mineral-based oil in one of those vehicles with a turbo and all on it, then that turbo wouldn't last.
No, it cokes up the bearings and stuff in the turbo, okay. and
that's
causes
the problem
issue.
We had with them when they first came out back years ago.
Right, the oils weren't good
right.
enough.
Right, we didn't have good enough oil for them.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
1963, hell, a man down at the bank took her from me. Oh, she was hotter than a $2 pistol. She was the fastest thing around. Long and lean, every young man's dream. She turned every head in town.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is the Car Doctor, Kim Remco, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. I did have one question. Who's the wise guy that ordered another Hurricane this season?
I don't know, but I've been oiling my gun up.
Yeah.
I'm going to find that sucker. I'm going to pop around at him.
Right.
Yeah. Not if I get to him first.
Oh, no, you? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, he's going to look like a sponge when we get through it. He's going to be holy. Yeah. Holy, holy.
I think there'll be a whole lot of people that yeah. like to get a hold of that one.
Man, yeah. We've had enough of that stuff. Come on,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, 2020 is not to be outdone by 2005 when we had this many number named storms. So, yeah, it's gotta.
Yeah, but they all didn't have to, you know, come in around the Mobile area and Pensacola and New Orleans and, you know, the Gulf Coast and Louisiana. I mean, come on.
Louisiana is getting its
poor Louisiana. They're going to put it, you know, they're going to saturate it. It's going to sink. More.
Well, it already is.
I yeah, mean, it's already sinking out around the mouth of the river. But,
right.
I mean, the whole dang cutting, the whole state's going to sink.
Yeah, slide off
damn,
of the Gulf.
It's
yeah.
unbelievable.
I tell you, it's, I don't know. Hopefully it won't come this way, but it's not looking that great for us right this second.
No, it's not. No, yeah, it's not. I hope and pray that we don't have any problems on it. I don't think we're going to have any trees that are weak enough to get pushed over or blown down now. I think we got rid of all of our weakness in our herd of trees and
yeah.
herd of limbs.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, the wind's going to be blowing the other direction. Maybe it'll just either stand them back up, you know, the ones that got kind of blown over a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, it might do that, you know, but then they might be too weak. Then they will fall down.
Exactly.
But I just pray that they don't. And you know, we've got so many people that still have roofs that are not mm-hmm. properly repaired. I know there's a couple of houses down the street from me that's got big oak trees that went through the darn things, went through the roofs.
Yep.
And I know there was a crew down there of like five guys with chainsaws, and they were cutting for like 2 days trying to get that big oak tree out of that house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? And I'm going like, I don't need those big oak trees around my house.
Oh, I know it.
I said, I got mine cut back to the, you know, to the line.
Mm-hmm.
And if they fall, it's going to be some very small limbs that touch my house.
Of course, now, through this, we did figure out how to make a fence crew work faster.
Oh, we do?
One of our guys at the shop, part of his fence blew over during the last storm.
Yeah.
And it had it scheduled to come in today and fix it.
Yeah.
And or yesterday, I mean, I think it was this weekend and the day finishing up. But, boy, they got in there, got that thing stood back up and fixed and all that and collecting their money before the storm comes back.
Before the storm comes back so they can come back and
I'm sure.
redo it again next week.
Right. I'm sure they've kept the materials list on what they needed it, you know, to do that part of the fence. And they'll just
yeah, I know
copy
my son lost
time.
All his fence around his house over in Pensacola area there.
Yeah.
And tree limbs, it must have been about 6-8 foot deep tree limbs in his backyard. So
I tell you, there's a bunch of people that they got in the bind over there during that one.
Oh, it
sure.
was unreal, man. Totally unreal.
Yeah.
But let's get back to our electric deal here. So what you're saying is we actually have some of those vehicles now that the motor doesn't run hardly anything,
except
what you're saying is that maybe the vacuum pump for the brakes?
Well, you know, our normal motors now, there's only really two things that run off the motor, and then that's the AC compressor and the vacuum pump. Now, if it's a hybrid, then no, it's not going to be it's not going to be run off the motor. It's just going to be an electric pump. But you know, if it's a normal normal setup that's not a hybrid or full electric, it is going to run the compressor off the motor. Most of our vehicles now, but it's a much more efficient compressor than that. You know, our power steering is all electric. Our on the newer trucks, they're all electric over hydraulic. Hydraulic braking, but as far as the booster is all electric. Mass cylinder is a totally different setup from what everybody's used to. So it's they're heading more towards the electric stuff. I mean, it's it works. Yeah,
you know. All that being said, have they? I know they've changed our specifications on motor oil probably 15, 20 times in the last 20 years. I mean, you know, they keep coming out with different A, Bs, and Cs, and it's got to have this, and it's got to have that. And then we took this out, and we put this in, and all of the bases of the oil viscosities that that they have and the packages that they put in the oil. Now, how and what have they done to our brake fluids? Are we in a situation where the brake fluids have been done the same way? Is that why, or one
not
of the reasons
really.
Why we need to drain the brake fluids? We never had to flush our brake fluids out
right
before.
And they're back and forth on that. I mean, for a while there on some of our vehicles, I think it was through like 17, 18 model stuff, they recommended brake flushes at about every 30. And then they got away from it. Now they're kind of talking about it again. So it's, I don't know. I don't think they can make up their mind on that one. To me, it's still a good idea to do.
Well,
you know,
I've seen some kits in some of the oil change shops and all where they could put it in the fluid. And it's like checking your salinity and acid in your swimming pools.
Right.
You know, and they were putting the little strips in there.
Mm-hmm.
And or they were taking a sample out and they were showing you the color. And if the color had to be this color or it was bad or
right.
whatever.
Or percentage of water, moisture in it and that kind of stuff.
Now,
yeah.
Is that what's really happening? Are we getting, due to the fact that most everything now is made out of aluminum?
Right.
Or some light product, even a lot of plastics are in there that really, really hard plastics that don't wear that bad, like some of the pistons in the calipers were.
Right.
Have they gotten away from those plastics? Or
not 100%. Yeah,
we still have some of those around.
There's still some of those around.
But now, do we have the pistons? Are they stainless steel or are they aluminum?
Well, now the pistons in there, now in like a mass cylinder, usually it's an aluminum. In the calipers, it's going to be either stainless steel or a composite. And that's where you're calling them plastic, but it's like a Bakelite or a composite.
But it's really, really, it's like a steel piston, but it's made out of a composite, made out of.
Right. It's as hard as a steel piston, but it's, it's made out of some kind of composite material.
Okay.
Yeah. Like a Bakelite or something along those lines.
Well, is the moisture the only thing that is mixing with this and diluting that, or are we actually seeing some wear factors from some of the aluminum components and stuff? And here we go again. We're talking about different metals and all, and compatibility of the metals.
Mm-hmm.
What is the?
Well, the biggest problem is the moisture. You know, that's our biggest failure point in a brake system would be moisture in the fluid. But there's other things that can contaminate it. I mean, you see it every once in a while, but it's usually, human induced. You know, somebody's poured something in there that they weren't supposed to.
Yeah. Oh.
And when that happens, it gets ugly with the brake system pretty quick. you know, all the rubber swells up. You don't really have much choice but just replace anything that had any kind of rubber in it. You've got to flush it out extremely well, because even, you know, if it gets oil in it, it's hard to get all that oil out of those lines and all the components.
Would just about have to flush it with a high-pressure system of some kind, like we used to use for the brake flushers, our brake bleeding kits, and run some kind of it would actually be a light lubricant cleaner.
Right.
I mean, even gasoline is made from oil. I mean, let's face it, you know.
Well, you know, and we'll
use a film.
Yeah, we'll use like a brake clean, you know, and blow the metal lines out with that. That tends to break it loose pretty well because it sticks to the inside of the lines, but not real bad, you know. But you really need to get it all out of there.
Yes, I've seen that, you know. Is the moisture coming from the thinness and the lightness of the aluminum components and stuff that we have, rather than the old cast steel master cylinders and wheel cylinders and things of that nature?
No, it's still because the fluid is a
what do they call it? Microscopic?
It's hydroscopic.
Hydroscopic. Okay.
I was drawing a blank on the name there, but you kicked it in. But it's still a hydroscopic fluid that
will absorb
moisture.
But they designed it that way, though, right?
Yeah, for some reason.
So, it is designed to pull the moisture into the liquid and keep it moving, because if the moisture sits on the piece of metal, it's going to either corrode or rust.
Right.
If it's steel, it's going to rust. If it's aluminum, it's going to corrode.
Right. And the systems are sealed. I mean, they don't really have... That's the way the caps are. That's the reason the caps are made the way they are, where the rubber bellows at the top of the reservoir is actually solid. There's no vent in it, but it's designed to drop down into the mass cylinder to give you that without pulling a vacuum on it. Basically,
it fills the void.
It fills the void and keeps you from having an airspace. In it. But it's. It works, it works, and but that being said, you got to flush it out every once in a while and get that moisture out.
Well, I was asking about some of that stuff because I was looking at my car and I was going like, I've put 60,000 miles on my car.
Yeah.
And had 40 on it when I got it, so I'm at 100,000, and I just feel like it's time now for me to flush all of those systems out.
Yeah.
And get some fresh fluids and all of them.
Absolutely. Looks like it's time for us to take a break. We'll get a little more into that when we get back. But we do have a couple text messages to get into also. Sometimes you bend, sometimes you stand, sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside the darkened door where blues won't haunt you anymore. With a brave, I'll free love and soul. Come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate. Break down the guide.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well,
I left Kentucky back
in 49 and went to Detroit working. And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. You have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. And let's see, we've got... I've got three text messages to get to. Let me start at the top here. But we were talking about pumps driven off the motor, and one that I didn't think about is the high-pressure fuel pump that's driven by the camshaft on these direct-injected motors, where you used to, if you think back years ago, we had a little fuel pump hanging off the side of the motor that pumped fuel up to a carburetor. They pumped, somewhere around 6 pounds.
Yeah.
Four to eight pounds,
somewhere six average.
Yep. And these things they're capable of doing, 5,000 or 6,000 pounds.
Well, now, do they run off a lobe like the other?
Yes. Well, depends on which
or
motor.
Do they run off like the front of the bolted to the front of the cam?
Depends on which motor. Our V8 stuff is, and our V6 stuff is a tri-lobe. It's a three-lobe section on the camshaft that pump runs off of. So basically one revolution hits it three times, okay?
What?
And that's just to keep up with the motor,
What?
On the demand, because the pistons in that little motor are very small to be able to generate the kind of pressure that they're talking about.
So you're talking about the
in the high pressure pump.
Pump, yeah, the motor and the pump. Now, not the
right. Well, the pump is, you know, it's got a low pressure pump in the tank that pumps it and pumps fuel forward, and it goes to that high pressure pump, and it's driven off the camshaft.
And okay. What kind of pressure are we generating?
5,000-6,000 pounds depends on.
Wait a minute. We was just talking about 4 or 6 pounds of fuel pressure, and now we're talking about how many pounds?
Oh yeah, thousands. Thousands.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of damn stainless steel lines we have on there for fuel lines?
It's exactly what it is. It's all stainless steel hard lines with ball
fittings.
You don't
want to cut into one of those while it's running, man.
No.
This stuff would blow your head off.
Yeah. You don't that's the reason, like, if you have to take a high pressure system apart, when you take that ball line loose fitting, you have to replace it.
Really?
It's a one time use line, so it's one and done, you know, that kind of pressure.
Yeah, well, you know, that thing would how many 1,000 pounds?
Well, I mean, 5,000, as much as 5,000 pounds on them easily. But you know, hey, it's you know, it's just the way it is. It's what it takes to make that the fuel
just
blow in like it's supposed to.
Yeah.
Because you're putting the fuel directly in the combustion chamber, you know, while the motor's running. So it's
okay. So we're talking about direct injection,
right? Our direct injected motors. So it's
so we're putting that in through the injector, right on top of the spraying it in right on top of the piston.
Right, just like a diesel does. It has a nozzle going straight into the
combustion chamber.
What kind of
pressure are diesels running now?
Oh, those things are upwards around, you know, 15,000 pounds.
What?
Yeah.
Fuel pressure?
Yeah.
You know, you'd think it would blow the end off a damn injector or something, you know, or a line. They don't.
Yeah.
Do they put those lines together with O-rings, or will they have some kind of steel clamps?
No, and the lines are actually, like I say, it's a ball fitting. You know, it has a cup-shaped, a rounded cup.
The old days of the O-rings and what have you are gone.
No, yeah, you don't do that with O-ring. You know, the O-ring
that's
never
what
hold
I thought.
Up. You know, and the line has a ball on the end of it, and the big nut that screws on it is torqued down to, you know, I don't remember how many pounds, but it's a specific.
So you're making it a metal to metal connection.
It's a metal to metal connection, and it's
it has to be for that kind of pressure.
The stainless, actually, the line is softer than the component you're bolting it to, so the line conforms to it. That's why it's a one-time use deal, because once you take it loose, you can't get it back in exactly the same spot.
Now, you're talking about fuel rails or fuel lines or what?
Well, the fuel lines, the rails themselves are, you know, you don't actually have a rail on our gas motors. You know, it's direct to the injectors. Yeah.
So it com- but it comes, does it come off of one line or it comes off of a rail? I mean, some kind of a.
Well, it comes off the high pressure pump, and some of them do go to injectors. Some of them go straight to the rail. It depends on. Some of them do have a common rail system. You know, like our diesels are common rail, and some.
But the old days of just a steel fuel injector line with O rings in it. All that stuff's gone.
Oh yeah, we're done with that. So,
The more I talk to you about some of this stuff, I mean, I'm old school,
mm-hmm.
but. I more readily understand why our do-it-yourselfers are not in a position to work on some of these later model vehicles.
Right.
Like we could do back in the day. You know, we just looked in the darn book, found out what was wrong with it, how you fixed it,
mm-hmm.
and got on the internet when the internet first started coming out.
Yeah.
And you fixed it, you know?
Right. Well, you know. I was reading, we've got the shop's 29 Chevrolet up and going and looking great, you know.
The real car.
Yeah, the real car. You know, and I was reading.
1929.
The repair manual, and it was.
Only thing I know that's older than me.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably a book. I don't know how many pages it is, but it's about the size of my little tablet here.
About 15 pages at the most.
Yeah.
In large print.
But it was actually set up for the owner to be able to maintain the vehicle.
Well, that's what we did. You know, that in the blacksmiths, I mean, you know, that's when blacksmiths, rather than shoeing horses, became mechanics.
Right.
You know?
Right. They're just shoeing a different
horse. They had bigger horses, more horses, yeah. They had more horses to work with.
Not a lot more, because I think this thing had about 36. So,
you know,
wasn't a bunch of horses, but that's okay. It's a neat little car.
So go ahead with your story.
Anyway, but, you know, we were talking about the high-pressure systems and that. But, you know, their technology has really moved on. You know, it's you know, we see all the time cars will be brought in that someone has fixed it themselves, and they can create more problems than what they had to begin with. You know, I had one today that had a water pump and outlet housing leaking, changed it. Now the cooling fan blows all the time. They couldn't get it to quit. And one of the things they had to unhook was the boost sensor and the O2 sensor, and they got the two wires crossed.
Oh, my Lord.
So it backfed, killed the ECM and O2. But, yeah, it's just an expensive proposition when you get into doing that.
Mm-mm-mm.
But let's see. We have another text message here. I have a 2017 Nissan Frontier, and the heater defrost in the vehicle will not get hot, warm, unless I have the engine over 2,000 RPMs. If it drops below 2,000, it gets cold. I have no problem with air conditioning getting cold. But the heater will not work unless the engine's running that fast. He's asking whether it could be a voltage regulator. The problem has actually existed since the vehicle was new. P.S. Yes, I know I should have acted while the vehicle was still under warranty. Usually when you're talking about a system like that, it's going to be a water flow issue, not a voltage problem. And I don't know about that particular vehicle, but more than likely it has a lot of the newer ones have a filter at the water inlet to the heater core. And it could have been trash from manufacturing the motor or whatever that was in the cooling system. And when it tried to run through that heater core, that filter stopped it. So at the higher pressure, it'll force it through enough to heat. But if not, then it just sits there and bypasses the heater core. So one of the first things I would do would be to check the heater core, for any kind of filter in the inlet and outlet of the core, and also sit there and flush the core out.
Can you flush that with air, or do you need to flush it with water?
You can blow it out with air, but you got to be careful how much air pressure you put to it, because it's not designed to have shop air of 130 or 40 pounds to it.
Okay, you can blow a seam out then.
Yeah, you can blow the core out if you're not careful.
Oh.
But you can back flush it, and it's usually the best way is with water. You can take a water hose and flush it out and check and make sure everything's flowing through without a problem. But let's see. Good evening, Top Cat, Tom.
I know that guy.
Yeah. I have a 2012 Nissan that with a slow freon leak. I have soaked the exposed lines and equipment with soapy water and could not find the leak, but it is a lot cleaner down there now. Okay. Is the fluorescent dye bad for the system? I know better than to use a sealer. Absolutely not.
No sealer.
But, actually most of the cars, and probably even in 2012, already had fluorescent dye in it. Of course, if you use soap and water, you just washed it off, but it will be back if it was in there. If you're not sure whether it had dye in it, it won't hurt to put tracer dye back in the system.
So if he's got a set of gauges and all, he can go ahead and put him some dye in there?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the dye injectors are like a big syringe, but you have to kind of screw the syringe down to force it in. So you can do it without gauges. But if it has a slow leak, you're probably going to have to charge it again anyway. You can even buy the refrigerant that has dye in it already. But instead of – you have to have – a black light in the glasses to be able to see that dye. You know, You may be able to see it with the naked eye, but more than likely you're going to have the
you
black
need a
light.
Black light, yeah.
Yeah. And then just, you know, trace it from there.
I think everybody ought to have a black light.
Yeah.
Especially if they have a cat. Do you know why?
Cheetos.
You can take a black light, mm-hmm. and you can walk around your house and look around on the edges of the doors and the door frames,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see where the cat urinated all over your stuff.
Yeah,
that you didn't even know about.
Right, right.
I'm going like, are you kidding me? I
exactly.
saw a lady, a real estate person, do that one time in a house.
Mm-hmm.
And said, let me show you where I said, you know, I haven't seen any. I haven't smelled any cat in here. And I said, oh, well, I'll show it to you. I said, how the hell are you going to do that? Let me show you. Turn all the lights off.
Yeah.
Got the black light, and I went, oh, my God.
That's a great song, Black Light Cat.
Black Light Cat, baby.
Yep. We're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors.
And men like Kix and Ronnie make it move. Living like a gypsy, always on the go. Doing what they best know how to do. Jamming gears has got to be a fever. Those men become addicted to the grind.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor, Kevin Ramp, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106.
Did we get all of our texts?
We just got another one in. Let me see.
Okay.
I was just halfway trying to read that while I was talking there a minute ago. That's why I stumbled on myself. You know, I can't do two things at once, you know. Let's see if I can get it to pull up here.
Oh, is that what's the problem with me? I always thought that I could, but that way I never did get anything done. Yeah, pat your head and rub your stomach. Yeah, that works too.
Exactly. On flushing the heater core, is that something I can do myself, or is it, if yes, how? The biggest thing is, you know, if you can get to the heater core lines, you know, the heater hoses, at the firewall and get them off without doing any damage. You know, sometimes they're extremely hard to get to and get loose.
If they get some age on them, they get, you know, the heat gets to them and they don't want to break loose.
Right. Not to mention they have, you know, some of them have quick connects. I'm not sure on that little Nissan, but, you know, when you have to have a special release tool to get them loose. If you can get them off, you know, and you feel comfortable doing that, then generally you can just take your you can take your garden hose. You know, first off, look up in the end of the tubes for the heater core.
There you go.
Make sure it does not have a filter in it. It'll be just a little plastic grid with, you know, holes in it where it can get stop the big stuff from getting in there. And make sure you take it out.
Like a thimble.
Yeah, and take it out, clean it, and then blow out the core with your water hose and put it back together, and you should be good to go. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
But shouldn't be that bad. But I know you wanted to get on in a little Nissan that you were talking about it a little while ago.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine call me and had a little Nissan, and the check engine light came on, so they went to a automotive shop. Yeah, one of the tire stores.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, yeah, it's the oxygen sensor, O2 sensor. So mm-hmm. they changed the O2 sensor on it. And I said, did they check the codes on it? Yeah, they checked the codes. And they said, yeah, it had an oxygen sensor code in it. I said, okay. So they said, well, I started driving it, and about 3 hours later, the light came back on. Mm-hmm. I said, really? She said, yeah. So I went back over there. And they put another one in it.
Right.
Yeah. They could put another oxygen sensor in it. So then the next morning, it came back on again.
Yeah.
So they took it back and said, oh, we're going to change the brands of the oxygen sensor then, you know.
Hmm.
So she called me. She says, what's going on?
Right.
I said, you've got a parts replacer, you know, an R&R technician, remove and replace to see if that fixes it. right. rather than taking the codes that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, if they've got a shop, I'm sure they've got programs in the dang computer.
Right.
And they can go to the computer and put those codes in, and it'll tell you what to check.
Right, right. Well,
not am I right or not?
Depending on what code it is. I mean, there's multiple different codes for an O2 sensor or for a lean system or a rich system that a lot of people relate to being an oxygen sensor code.
Right.
You know, if you have a O2 heater circuit code, you know, as long as you got the power in the ground getting to it, it's going to be the heater. It's going to be the O2 sensor, you know. If you have an O2 sensor circuit code, as long as the wires are good, typically it's going to be the O2 sensor. It could be the ECM, but, you know, there's ways to check it. You know, not something, you know, your average person is going to be able to check without the scan equipment. But I've seen so many people replace components
mm-hmm.
because of a code, but they're replacing it's the result, not the cause.
Right.
You know,
they're replacing the tattletale item.
Right. I see MAP sensors get, you know, which is the manifold pressure sensor.
Right.
Get replaced all the time.
That could have been a vacuum leak.
Well, I mean, if it runs bad, it's going to change the manifold vacuum. And
oh, the other thing they wanted to do, with the next thing was when they changed it, the O2 sensor, the catalytic converter's bad.
Well, it probably had a converter efficiency code to begin with.
Right.
And
so they took it to McDonald Muffler Shop,
mm-hmm.
and they checked it over there and said, I'm sorry, there's something else in front of all that because your converter is fine.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, these fixings, you know, some of those converters are $500, $600, $800 or $1,000, you know?
Yeah. At that point, you're better off going back to the manufacturer
right.
service department and let them check.
Well, and that's, in this instance, I knew an independent guy that had been mm-hmm. a Nissan tech for like 15 years and was working right. in an independent shop because he'd helped him take care of his dad.
Right.
Because his dad had a stroke, so he needs to go to his house 2 or 3 times a day and move him around in a wheelchair, you know. Well,
right.
you can't do that at a damn dealership.
Right.
But an independent shop, he was so guy's so good, turning enough hours,
mm-hmm.
that the owner let him do that, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
But he's still a good tech. He knows how to right. check all that. So.
Right.
She didn't buy no converters and stuff. It wasn't no two cents.
Right, right. I mean, there's so many other things that can cause it. You know, I have one. I had one the other day that was sitting, it was, trying to remember which code it was sitting, but it was either, it was one of the mass airflow codes, and it was simply because the airbox was not bolted down on all four corners.
Mm-mm-mm.
It was sucking air past the filter,
right.
which was disrupting the airflow across the mass airflow sensor, which was causing
right.
code,
yeah.
code to come
right.
up. So, you know. And,
but you you know, here you go. It was the tattletale
mm-hmm.
item that had the electronic voltage to it,
right?
That told you had a problem, even though it right. wasn't the tattletale item.
Mm-hmm.
It's the it's an item or two or something in front of that,
right?
You know,
right. And you know that's where MAP sensors. Anything that makes it run bad is going to change the manifold pressure because it's running bad.
Right.
And people throw MAP sensors at them all the time, and that has nothing to do with what the actual problem is. That is what's telling you got
right.
a problem.
Yeah, that's the tattletale. It's telling
right.
you, hey, something's wrong. Stuff is coming to me is not getting to me like it's supposed to.
Right.
I'm not getting the right air. I'm not getting the right gas. I'm not, you know, I'm not getting the right power or something.
Right.
Something, the parameters that have been allocated to that item were not correct, so therefore it's a tattletale, and it kicked on its light.
Right.
And said, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Check it
yeah.
out, fool.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of times it's, you know, that light coming on is a component's doing its job and saying, hey,
right.
you got a problem here. Go look for it.
Oh, yeah. Look back up the line somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's kind of like the guys that used to come into the independent shop you worked in, bring, you know, a couple $1,000 worth of parts.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I want you to put all these on. He said, why? He said, well, That box store up there put one of them little deals on there, and they had all these codes, and that's what each one of these items is represents
related
one of them
for.
Codes.
Yeah.
So, well, let's find out what's going on first. Take all those back.
I have made and won that bet a bunch of times.
You know, oh, yeah, like, I know. Yeah,
because I've told them before, I said, I tell you what I'll do. I will, you know, because you try and get them to let you diagnose it first.
Well, they don't want to pay that $65, $85.
Well,
they
don't
realize
that
unit, some of those units are $20,000, $30,000.
Right.
That's got enough technology and smartness built into it
right.
to indicate what the hell's wrong.
Well, they don't want to pay for a diagnostic, and then, but they're willing to go buy $1,200
worth of parts. $1,200
worth of parts.
Yeah. Thinking about, you know, 10 diagnostics for that or more.
And I usually make them the deal. It's like, I tell you what we'll do. I'll check it out. And if I have to put all those parts in there, you don't owe me a dime for putting
them
on.
There you go.
If I don't have to put them on there, you pay me the diagnostic and for putting whatever part on it needs.
Right.
You can take the rest of that crap back to the
store.
There
you go. Get your money back.
And, you know, I've never had to replace all the
systems. No, you never lost that bet, dude.
Never lost that one. Never lost that one. So it was a safe bet. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And save the customer money, you know, and that's what it was all about.
Well, you know, it's that when that light comes on, one of the telltale items on there has indicated there's something wrong. It's not reading the right parameters.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Sound like we run up to the end of our show. I want to thank everybody for listening to The Car Doctor. Remind everybody to go out and see UJ Chevrolet. We got 170-some new vehicles coming in
Woo!
Before the end of the year. So so come out and see them.
But, find you one. You've got got your vehicle out there. And we'd certainly like to bless all of our veterans and all of our first responders. And for God's sake, we got this hurricane coming in. Be careful, people. Don't get in no trouble.
Yep, no hurricane parties.
No hurricane parties. Yep. More.